We found a dildo cloning machine and we cloned the dildos.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Bill Steitler. Bill is an agnostic, so we talk to him about doubt and whether or not you can ever really be certain that God does or doesn't exist.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Molly Glover.
Hello.
And we are happy to have with us this evening our special guest star, Bill Steitler.
Hello.
We had Bill's lovely wife, Sharon, on earlier.
The bird chick.
Yeah. We felt it was only fair in the interest of matrimonial harmony
that matriarchy. We had Bill on.
Yeah.
It was a matriarchy is what happened. Yeah. Is what you're admitting to.
I am.
Even though you said my name last.
I did. But I'll tell you that the reason for that is because you were taking a drink when
That's
I was
true.
About to say a name.
When am I not? Am I right?
So then it would have been like Molly Glover and you're like, whoa, and I didn't want to do that.
That's what I sound like most of the time.
It's true. At home at least.
Hey-o.
So Bill is here.
I'm super excited. I love Glee. I think it's a great show. The Lady Gaga episode was fantastic.
It was actually, I'm going to be very clear, it was Lady Gaga. Gaga and Katy Perry on the same episode. No, actually, there was another Lady Gaga. I'm sorry. I know this.
I haven't seen Glee in a long time.
Yeah, we dropped off that.
I did too. I dropped off of it after like season two. I kind of lost. Anyway, no, we're not here to talk about Glee.
It's weird.
We really aren't.
Okay. Yes, it's weird that we're not, though.
We're here to talk about doubt.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
No, just doubt.
Like when you eat too much organ meats and your toes swell up?
If you can watch Mrs. Doubtfire and still believe in a benevolent God, then you are a saint.
Oh, no. I'm Robin Williams doing a Scottish accent.
Oh, but I'm your father wearing bosoms.
So...
You're both so terrible at Scottish accents. Unbelievably bad.
I'm not
saying mine's great.
Robin Williams is bad because I'm imitating Robin Williams.
That was the intent.
That was Robin Williams' fault. You can blame him.
Yeah.
So Bill is an agnostic.
I am an agnostic person, yes.
As opposed to the rest of us who are atheists. And so we're going to talk a little bit about, you know...
Much like nobody in discussions of sexuality, nobody likes a bisexual in discussions of faith. No one likes an agnostic.
I feel like, I will say, I feel like when people ask me, oh, so you're an atheist, so you're 100% sure there's no God, I tend to say yes, but that is just ingenuous because of course I'm not, because I'm so open to reason and science and stuff. So, I mean, I would say 99% sure.
Yeah, as I've said many times on this podcast, I'm like 99.7% sure there's no God. So technically I'm an agnostic, but I round up.
For me, it's more of an issue of I believe that the answer is fundamentally unknowable, and I don't consider the pursuit of the question to be useful.
Apatheist.
That is more like an apatheist, which is like it doesn't matter. See,
and again, this is the other thing, great thing about being an agnostic is as soon as you tell someone you are one, they immediately try to reclassify into what you actually
are. Are you familiar with the term apatheist?
I can probably assume what it means.
Yeah. It's fairly self-describing.
What does agnostic mean to you then, specifically that term?
First of all, I mean, this gets into my... First of all, I have a very overactive imagination. Like, I know there are no ghosts. I freak the fuck out every time I have to walk into a dark basement.
Well, why wouldn't you? Because if there were ghosts, that's where they would be.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, I read five to 10 years ago, I read a book that absolutely terrified me, which was called The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which is the most... I showed this... I was, like, talking to my wife, Sharon, about how terrifying... I said, read this. And so she starts to read it, and she sees it as this inspiring story of these people who are dealing with their disabilities. And I'm like, no, this is a man who lost the concept of left.
Yeah.
He does not realize the left side of the universe exists.
Mm-hmm. Is this, like...
It's Oliver Sacks.
The neurological brain damage problem, that lets you... Doesn't let you recognize... Object recognition is broken.
It's basically your left and right hemisphere aren't communicating.
Each chapter is a different case study. There's people who have agnosia, which means they can see shapes, but they can't put like faces together.
Propagnosia.
Some people have shape agnosia. Like he shows these two guys a glove and says, "What is it?" And one guy says it's a coin purse for sorting different sized coins.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll talk to, like, this man is constantly, like, I think he's constantly trapped in, like, 1951 because of an injury. He,
mm-hmm.
And if he sees himself in the mirror, he freaks out because he's aged 30 years.
His mental picture of himself is so young.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And, but the one that kills me is the guy who loses the concept of left. So he'll be, like, eating a steak or whatever, and he'll eat the right side of the steak and go, oh, I'm still hungry. And they have to train him to turn, if you're still hungry when you're done eating, try turning the plate around.
Oh my gosh.
Because he cannot perceive the left side of things.
Wow. I see where you're going with this, and
this
I like it.
Terrifies me, because it just, as I'm reading this, I realize that the brain is just a meat sponge floating in a vat of chemicals.
Yeah.
And if anything changes in this, the chemistry, the, you know, the physiology of the brain, your perception of reality is completely screwed.
Yes.
Yeah. But the reason I think that is because of the way my brain is right now.
Yes.
The tool by which you measure everything is...
But I don't have a choice. I have to operate,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
with what I've got going on here.
Sure. Pat's grandmother has Alzheimer's, dementia. Mm-hmm. She's 101. She's like... Mm-hmm. Physically, the lady could live until 120. Mentally, she's not there, which I have to say is fine because she's evil and I hate her.
Fair enough.
Spiteful.
But, well, she's a terrible...
Whatever.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
I often call down to my great-grandmother, like, I don't believe in hell, but I yell to the floor when I'm talking about her.
Yeah.
Like, you hear me, Mamaw?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is that she actually, since she's gotten Alzheimer's, she's gotten very, very sweet. So she's way easier to deal
with. It's a ruse.
Oh, wow. She's forgot how much she hates everything.
But the thing is that she, most of the time, doesn't really know what's going on anymore.
Right.
She doesn't know what she's going through. And it you kind of have to remind yourself, as awful, the person it's awful for is her daughter.
Right.
Pat's mom is like tearing herself apart over the whole thing.
Yeah.
But the person who's going through it really isn't aware of it.
Yeah. I will tell you, just having been delusional, like completely and utterly delusional, mm-hmm. I will tell you, it is also scary to be in it. And I don't know, I mean, it depends on how much lucidity you have in between, but I, in the hospital specifically, I have a memory of, I don't know how I got there. All I know is the next thing, I remember was I think my head hurt, and the next thing I knew was a nurse was shaking me. And holding me, and I had my hands flat against a cement wall, and I was just banging my head as hard as I could into the wall.
Wow.
And she was like, "What are you doing?" And I stopped, and all I know was whatever, in my brain, this was logical. This made sense. I was just supposed mm-hmm. to do this. And I said, "I don't know." And it was so frightening to be like, I mean, I remember starting doing it. I remember starting to hit my head.
Mm.
I mean, my brain was like, smash your face into this wall. This is a good idea. And I was like, yes. And I started doing it. And it didn't even occur. It's just, it's so terrifying to be hijacked.
I mean, that's a little different from the sex.
Sure.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, these are people with brain damage that, you know, like the guy who can't perceive left, he can't even perceive that he can't perceive.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the, you know, you can, I mean, and it's sort of, because I have very minor depression as well, and I'm able to, before I started taking medication for that, I was able to realize that I was having unrealistic thoughts. I was able to accept that rationally. I was not able to escape the effects of that.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that, so where I come from this is, this doubt is sort of the main sort of pole star that I have, because I try to be reasonable. I was trying to figure out how I put this. A while ago I decided I was just going to be, I was going to be shallow, is how I put it. It's like, I'm going to worry about the things that I'm going to worry about, and I'm not going to feel bad about, like, the things that I'm not going to do anything about. But I try to be rational and realize that I do some things for emotional or irrational reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe, what's the word? Logic is not a tool for discovering the truth. Logic, like most philosophies, is a tool for justifying doing whatever you wanted to do in the first place. Because I knew too many philosophy majors in college.
It's too flexible. It can be used. It's like statistics.
Yeah.
Depending on whatever it is you're trying to determine, you can make it, it's malleable.
Yeah. It is, although I think if you use logic correctly, in many cases, there is only one potential solution. But, you know, obviously, there's somebody else who's going to go, well, that's not how logic works at all.
So you have to take the duck across the river and leave the fox with the grain.
Sure. You bring two, but only leave one. Wait.
2 + 1 + 1.
Which, yeah, I understand your point. You know, when I sit here and I go, well, this whole, you know, God sent his only son and then killed him to forgive humans instead of just saying, you know what, I'm omnipotent. I forgive you.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that is, I mean, say there is hypothetically, you know, some sort of Christian God and the Jesus thing, all that happened. Mm-hmm. We would be incapable of comprehending the rules by which such a being would be governed. Yeah. Yeah. And so maybe some of that shit would make logical sense. We just can't see the rules behind how it would operate.
Maybe God is left and we just can't perceive left. Right now,
yeah. Well,
that's deep, Mom.
If there is some sentient being that created life on this planet or the universe, or whatever, it is so far beyond my ability to comprehend that being. It's like trying to explain astrophysics to an amoeba.
It's when I think about doubt, when I talk about being an agnostic atheist, I talk about. If there's a supreme being, we couldn't possibly conceive that to me is the reason why I don't believe in a Christian God more than anything. It's like the Christian God is too much like us.
Arrogant. Mm.
And it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, here's a question, because I was actually I don't completely understand the argument, which is, that should be my opening statement for everything I say, by the way. I sort of half understand everything I talk about.
Like an agnostic.
Somebody was talking about this book called The Omnipotence Mistake, which I think I apologize if I'm getting this wrong, the thrust of it was that theologians made a mistake of saying that God was omnipotent and could do anything, that it was better, that it made more sense... for a limited God, sort of like, you know, like Zeus is in charge of the weather, and that's what he does. Yeah. So God can do a lot of things.
Cheats on his wife all
the time. But house spirits, like in that way,
turns into a, you know, goose to have sex with a woman. What the hell is up with women in ancient times? That hey, I'm gonna have sex with that goose.
That goose was a smooth talker.
That golden shower is hot.
I'm just saying that goose had some moves.
Who gets pregnant from a golden shower? Is that even possible?
The bull was very, very wealthy. Very well-to-do, just a very comfortable living.
Bill, have you ever seen Malcolm in the Middle?
Yes.
Okay, so the
Are we talking about
the TV show? Yeah, yeah. The youngest son Dewey has one of my favorite bits ever about God. Where he's talking to his Sunday school teacher, and he's like, "The other day I was outside and I was burning ants with a magnifying glass, and then I thought to myself, they could be crying for me, they could be begging me to stop, they could be like praying to me and bowing to me and doing sacrifices to me, and I would have no idea. I'm just burning them. I can't even hear them.
Yeah.
Seems to me that'd be like God. I don't think he hears us at all. And if there is a God, maybe we shouldn't bother wasting our time trying to beseech him, because he's probably just going to smite us anyway, no matter what."
Yeah.
And it was like this idea. That's the only idea of God I can get behind. It's unknowable, unfathomable, and uncaring, because he doesn't give a shit about what we do.
I brought this point up to one of my best friends in my life. His name is Kirk Heiner, who is a lifelong Methodist. I met him in college. Wonderful guy. He was the best man at my wedding. And I was playing a game called Simant. And I brought up that point where there's a point where you're running an ant colony and trying to expand it. And there's a point where the guy who owns the house just comes in and mows the lawn, and he can screw up your colony. And like, he's just mowing his lawn.
Yeah.
And maybe when there's a tornado, it's just God mowing the heavenly lawn. And he took that and made it the title of like one of the novels that he wrote.
Mowing the heavenly lawn.
Yeah, I think that my concern with religion in general, you know, is this attempt to put some sort of ability to fake some ability to know what none of us could possibly know.
Yeah.
You know,
it's gatekeeping.
I think there is, to me, there's no evidence for God. The universe functions just fine without God.
Mm-hmm.
There's no part of the universe that requires a God to exist.
Right.
And I realize there are those that would argue, well, what about the first cause argument? And that's not really what this podcast is about, but that's bullshit. But anyway, so if there is a God, if there is a supreme being, you know, why isn't it, why, it could just be.
Yeah, it's the basic stuff, and I'm sure that there are people who've written, you know, philosophical tomes about this, explaining this, but it's like, those are the things, I mean, I think those are the things that really drove me away from organized faith, which is like, okay, you have to have faith and believe in God without any evidence, and here's this book about every time God met somebody to prove to them that he existed.
The napkin, you know? Religion is the one true net religion, because it says so on this napkin.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
But just, you know, the basic things like, you know, what about the, you know, the Sumerians? Where are the, you know, the ancient Greeks, you know, the people who existed before Abraham.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What your agnosticism, does the existence or non-existence, or how you interpret that or open to that possibility, change how you live your life in any
way? I don't give a shit. I mean, I have... I first of all, you have to understand that I am I'm sorry, I'm about to mispronounce this word that I've said. So I'm misanthrope. I was about to say misandrist because I've been reading. I was on the internet. I'm a misanthrope. I don't like people, and I don't want to be around them. But I really love people.
No.
And I love being around them, because the people I meet individually are great.
You like your you like
the mob is
you don't
the
like
mob
people you like your people.
Yes, I mean meeting strangers. I mean, I'm socially awkward, so I don't have have trouble interacting with strangers. But like, most people are fine. Most people are perfectly great. Even if I disagree with them, most people are entirely personable human beings. I just judge people by how they act, I guess, because I have friends who are Catholics, who are evangelical Christians. I have friends like you guys. And it's just, I don't... And they're all nice people who, for some reason, are friends with me, even though I'm a Class A jerk.
If you're a misanthrope, how can you say most people are great?
Because I don't believe that people are going to do the right thing. I believe that people are going to do selfish things.
Okay,
it's
the concept of human good. That is the problem.
It's the men in black argument that a person is smart.
Yeah.
People are dumb.
I remember doing this as a kid. I have been a lifelong devil's advocate. Like, no matter what the argument is, I will always take the other side of it, just because I don't know why this is in my DNA. I will refuse to be part of a mob. I will not, even if I believe in the cause.
Did you?
I don't believe in mobs.
Iconoclast.
Were you in debate in high school at all?
No, we didn't.
Oh my God, you would have been great.
No,
that's the best. The people that were the best at debate, because I'm the same way. Yeah. Is I can argue in any side, because it's just a matter of I enjoy it very much, and so does. So Eric Knight used to always say, he had kind of a verbal tic where he would say, I hate to play devil's advocate, but, and one day I stopped him, I said, no, you don't. You love it. You love playing devil's advocate. Stop saying you hate it. And he was like, okay.
I used to say it was a small town, and then I found out it was, you know, 50,000 people is not a small town.
No.
Not a city, because I've been since I've...
We'll just call it a town.
It was a town.
It was just a town.
It was just a place for people to live.
You know, the school was integrated. There was a downtown. You could go and do things. But it was, you know, it was Ohio. So it was in the 80s. So it was like we had the things like the Satanic Panic.
Yeah.
And you would find the chick tracks in the bathroom.
Oh, yay.
And those scared the hell out of me to be, you know, because I, like I said, I have an active imagination.
That was their job.
That was their job to scare you. I was never, we were never really active churchgoers. I do remember, this is the one memory I have of Sunday school, is that, you know, we always went when I was a little kid, and then we stopped going. And then I think I actually asked my parents if we could start going again, just because it was something that other people in school were doing. And so, the day that we went back, they brought out these sheets that they had, where you got, like, it was like Noah's Ark, and you got an animal sticker for every time you went. And they had one for me from the last time I went was the first day they started doing it, and they still had it.
Well, that's sweet.
Now that's faith, Bill. That's the opposite of doubt. Yeah. That's faith.
They had faith that you were going to come back and put another sticker in that book.
So yeah. do you feel like because you enjoy playing devil's advocate and always have and all that, that idea of doubt is what drove you from faith, I mean, in general? Because it's true that organized religion says believe and don't question.
Yeah.
All of them do.
I don't know. I mean, I see myself, like I said, I have an overactive imagination. I still have a very mystic personality. I will probably, I can see myself later in life, like, turning to, a very scholarly Judaism and things like that, where it's just more about
Kabbalah. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
No, I mean more
you
like
and Madonna.
I mean the more like studying the questions of the law. Because
interpreting the Talmud.
I was watching one of these, and it was one of the greatest. It was this beautiful moment. We were watching. There was a history. I think it was History Channel called Mysteries of the Bible. And they were talking about Noah's Ark, and they had this. They had these people on there talking about, like, the people who are trying to find Noah's Ark and, like, mounted expedition and, like, all this stuff. And then they cut to this rabbi, and he says, the mystery of Noah's Ark, the mystery of the story of Noah's Ark is not where did Noah's Ark land. The mystery of the story is, how can I be like Noah? How can I be a righteous man in an unrighteous world? And I thought, that's beautiful. I love that.
But then I enjoy that Judaism recognizes that the Bible is allegory, that these stories are not meant to be interpreted literally. You know, I still don't buy into the God thing, but I at least what they're doing is looking at these stories and saying, how does this story apply to me?
Sure.
Not, there's no such thing as dinosaurs because Noah's Ark.
Those are. I can't imagine having. Although I do know, in an outer circle, some people who are like that, and I find that fascinating. And they're very sweet people to talk to. They're not mean to anyone that I know, but they have chosen to believe that dinosaurs are a trick. And I'm like, okay, that's all
I
right.
I just love thinking about that and thinking like, mahaha, at last I've duped them into believing this. Like, what's the end goal on this long con? I would say hundreds of millions of year old con, but to them it would be, you know, like a 10,000 year old con or 5,000 year old con.
I imagine, like, okay, so what I picture is, like, in the night, like, guys in, like, all black with, like, bandit masks carrying giant sacks of dinosaur bones over their backs, like Santa, like tiptoeing to sites and digging, and like
I presume it was the the devil. Somebody I was reading,
of course,
online,
it was Satan.
This has nothing to do with anything, but somebody online had this great story about taking his son to the Natural History Museum for the first time, and his son runs down the hallway super excited to get to the dinosaur exhibit and just stops in the front door. And he walks up there and thinks the kid is having this awe-filled moment. He gets up there and the kid is crying. He goes, you didn't tell me they were dead.
Oh, that's a rotten thing to say.
Yeah.
So, what were we talking about?
Doubt.
I tend to get us off track.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, I try to question my own motives. I try to realize when I'm doing things for irrational reasons and not justify them as rational.
What things do you have faith in? I mean, like, I don't want to put you on the spot, but, like, I mean, you have a good marriage. You and Sharon are, like,
solid.
So, like, that's obviously something there.
I don't think any marriage is rocks. I actually, you know, the thing that more and more, every relationship is like, it's like you're carrying a butterfly through a forest fire and you have to watch and work every single day to get. I mean, you can't take things for granted because that's when they go kerfluent. I mean, and I don't, you know, I don't. That's. I'm sorry. I was about to bring up an example that it's not my privilege to share, but it's. What do I have faith in? I don't know. I do have faith in my wife. I know her, you know, well enough. I think most people are decent or trying to be decent. I mean, there's, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess I would need a better, like, set of examples. I mean,
I'm
Look, well, here's an example of
maybe
science.
Trust
Let me put it. I trust science. I do not understand most science. Like, I trust that when I flip the light switch, the electricity is going to come on.
Sure.
I understand the theory of why that works. I don't understand
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't. It's like the Sherlock Holmes thing where he doesn't know that the Earth goes around the sun. And he goes, okay, I'm going to try to forget that as quickly as possible. That has no bearing whatsoever on my life. It's like, yeah.
Do you, so in that case, you, I mean, you have trust in delegation to experts. Like, that you clearly, there are people who know more about things than you, about, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't, they would have to, I would have to, like, figure out a reason why they'd be lying to me. It's like, I trust that the Earth is round. I can't imagine why anybody would lie to me about that. I have no firsthand experience of it. You know, I've seen the curvature of the Earth, and I can't imagine, I can't see where the money would be in lying to me about the
big
Earth.
Big flat Earth.
Yeah, big, they're trying to protect us all from falling off the edge.
Is, do you think that
Do you trust that we landed on the moon?
Yeah.
Do you think that a part of your agnosticism is the previously mentioned devil's advocate part of your personality?
Oh, probably.
Where I mean, you're not an atheist because you can't help but to kind of argue against that as well as the other. Because
atheism is taking a stand.
Yeah.
Which is not to suggest
taking a stand on top of a mountain with the sun behind you.
Not to say that it's like waffling or that you're being wishy-washy.
If you say you're atheist, you're like you're closing yourself off to the possibility.
There's only a few things I take a stand on.
And I really respect you guys for, you know, doing this podcast and putting yourselves out there. I'm really not interested in talking. I'm not interested in having a debate about faith. I'm interested in talking to people about their religious or non-religious views, and like finding out how that motivates them and what they think. I find that fascinating.
I kind of agree. I think the debate over whether or not there is an existence of the supernatural. We don't even have to say like a god or the Abrahamic god, but I think that debate is kind of pointless.
Oh yeah.
I would say that like, the religious motivations of people that have those beliefs are more what I would question, like the political wants and desires, you know, how they would enforce their beliefs on others.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, like, especially in politics, so much of the rhetoric you see is fundraising motivated.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They're trying to rile up the, I mean, it's like anything on, you know, a great number of conservative and to a large degree, you know, liberal commentators are, they've figured out if I say this, people will give me money.
Right.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter how crazy it is, if I say it, I get money.
It's like it was like abortion. Like, I mean, the whole like discussing whether or not there's a God to a large degree is pointless. Just like there's a certain point with an abortion conversation where if you think life begins at conception, we're not going to be able to have a conversation now because we fundamentally disagree.
There is no common ground from which we can start to understand each other's point of view.
If to you that's a baby, it's not a baby. We can't go on from there. We've already disagreed. We're done. Yeah. And so I'm in agreement with, I like the idea of discussing the overarching ideas or like the more, so that's what motivates you. And I just wish that more religious, let's just say specifically like strong fundamentalist Christians that I have met were able to have that, I don't respect people who don't have self-awareness. And a lack of self-awareness is something that
I'm not interested in the debate with Christians. No. Especially because most Christians I know are not crazy right-wing fundies.
No.
But I'm not interested in, I mean, I agree that I'm not interested in the debate. I think where we all agree, the three of us, and probably you too, Bill, is when people use religion as a catalyst to get what they want forced on other people.
Speaking of, you know, religions, Facebook, I enjoy Facebook so much more now because I actively unfollowed my super conservative family members.
Yeah.
Not just hid them, but I unfriended them. I'm like, you're my family member, and when I see you, I love you, and I love talking to you. I don't want to see this anymore. And now Facebook is so great because it's not like, I actually called it permanent Thanksgiving, where every day on Facebook is like a bad Thanksgiving dinner, and Facebook is so much more fun now.
Yeah.
It's just my friends and the family members I want to talk to. Yep.
I do that too. I unfollow one Bible verse and we're done.
There is, you know, blatant political motivation, and But I mean, that's just people being people. Because I mean, I was thinking about like, you know, Stalinism, for crying out loud, was, you know, based in a supposedly rational, a regime run by an insane maniac. Mm-hmm. And then you have things like, you know, the Reign of Terror, which was entirely a rational movement that led to, you know, these mass executions of the nobility in France. It's just people justifying whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People, they stink.
People are stupid.
People, what a bunch of bastards.
A person can be smart. People are dumb.
It's my favorite quote ever.
Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading about. We were watching the new Cosmos, and Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about the scientists for the smoking lobby who came out with the pro. No, it wasn't that. It was the lead in gasoline. That's what he was talking about. And the scientists that were coming out. This one guy said, "We shouldn't put lead in gasoline. It's terrible for everybody." And all these other scientists came out. No, there's no problem with this. We've done all these studies funded by the oil companies that say they're perfectly fine. So, I mean, I do trust science, but, I mean, you have to...
Doctor smoking cigarettes on TV and being like, the Q factor is what keeps this cigarette from causing me damage.
But,
yeah, I trust science will eventually arrive at the correct answer.
Yeah.
I believe, like, a lot of times, peer-reviewed science is something that people are more demanding of these days, and I think that in the 50s and 60s it was more like, well, he's a doctor, honey, like, of course he's
four
right
out of
and
five.
Now there's all this, I mean, we're in the age of transparency and coming off the age of information, and there's all kinds of resources now. I mean, you can look things up on PubMed.
With that, everyone has a voice and everyone can put up a
blog, but not everyone can have a journal in.
But there's all this bunk information out there as well that is just as transparent and misleading and bringing people down. Look at the truthers. I mean, there's a lot of information out there that appears very scientific that's super
all these
bunk.
People that aren't doctors and aren't scientists going, here's why vaccinations are bad. And it's like, but there's no actual scientific evidence to back it up.
Right.
Just one last thing, Bill. I think what you were saying earlier about how our brains are wired and capable, that's our limiting factor for how we interpret reality and what we determine as real, is our brains, how they work. I think that is, like, kind of a people are good individually, but, like, humanity, people at large, are problematic, because we're not wired to perceive long-term consequences or just that number of people in the world. We can't think of each other as individuals or as valuable, informed living beings, because it's just, these concepts are too big for most people to understand.
Mm-hmm. How do you guys deal with, I mean, do you guys have the moments of, like, the irrationality of, like I say, like walking through a grave, if you had to, oh, I'm going to walk through this graveyard.
Oh, yeah. I believe in pet heaven. Uh-huh. Completely irrationally, I don't care. Yeah. I believe in pet heaven because I think they deserve it.
I mean, I don't believe this. I mean, and this is the point. I mean, like, the big questions, like death and everything, those are the things that we don't actually have answers for, and people have decided, well, nothing happens. There's things like that, but, like, there is something that is moving us around in these hunks of carbon that is different than this desk, and it goes away, and it's not just a matter of pumping more electricity into the body to restore it. I mean, there is it's something that we haven't defined yet.
I like the law of conservation in that sense, and I like the idea that I read when our friend Molly's sister died, and I found this really great thing. It was like, you want a physicist to speak at your funeral. Mm-hmm. And it was like, because the physicist will tell your parents that, you know, the energy that made you is still there. It's somewhere. And that which animated you and everything that, and every molecule of your being is still here.
Yeah. The light reflected off you and into eyes of those around
forever.
You is,
there was a
the photons
third rock from the sun. Dick had a very great, he had to deliver a eulogy and he's like, that was how he started. It's still there. I don't know what it is, and I don't know that we can measure it, and we perceive so little of the actual universe.
We're not Lucy. I mean.
Oh, God. Oh, don't even get me started.
You just gave away the first answer to his five questions.
I figured out why that movie pissed me off so much. It's because it's like she gets smarter, but it's not that she acts smarter. It's that she gets magic powers. I think I would forgive that movie so much if, like, they opened it up and said, you need to take this amulet. And she put the amulet on, and she started to get these magic powers.
Fucking Aya Agamotto, like, or something.
You use more of your powers. It doesn't let you change, you know, the color and shape of your hair.
She got smarter, but she didn't get hotter. So I was like, why are we even watching this?
Okay, well, we could go on forever, as is often the case.
Could we? I doubt it.
But we have to get to five questions, or maybe not. I don't know.
We do.
So
that's a certainty.
Molly, question number one.
Question number one is, what's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
The best movie I've seen in the last 30 days is probably a very old movie I've seen for about the 30th time. It's a 1930s movie called The Women. It is a George Cukor directed comedy that takes place entirely in the world of society women in the 30s. And it's, people will tell you it's sexist. I think it's actually very cutting and incisive.
Hmm. But is Katharine Hepburn in that one?
No, but virtually every other actress of the day is. She's probably the only one who's not in it.
Completely and totally unfamiliar.
It is complete. There are no men in the movie at all. It is
amazing. Is unusual. Which was more
unusual today.
More common back then than it was.
Does it pass the Bechdel test?
It does, but virtually what they spend all their time talking about is men.
Though. That's why I asked.
But they do have conversations about that, and it contains one of the coldest put downs ever put to film.
What is it?
The women are at this divorce ranch, and they find out that one of the women there is actually the mistress of one of the other women. Who her husband left her for. And they're having this fight, and I forget, it's not Carol Lombard, I forget who the actress is. She says something like, I made him pay for what he wanted. You made him pay for what he didn't want.
Okay, so question number two.
Question number two. Who's your favorite atheist or agnostic character?
I think that would... It's got to be like just about anybody in the Discworld books who is smart enough to realize that the gods exist, but they're just kind of these jerks with superpowers. And so you really don't want to get on their bad side. I think it's... I can't remember which book it is, but there's this great line. It's like, Discworld is a world where if you're an atheist, the gods throw a rock through your window. So it's best just to play nice. Probably, any of the witches or, probably one of the witches from
Granny Moggins. I can't remember.
I don't know. I haven't read the books.
Oh, they're really.
Yeah, I know. I should.
They start off okay, and then they get really, really good.
So question number three, what is your geekiest hobby?
Fountain pens.
Fountain pens.
Which is, I had a small collection of pens. I usually work in a pen store. And I know this is the geekiest hobby because finding books about fountain pens is the hardest thing in the world to do. Like, you can go into, like, the hobby section of a used bookstore and you will find five books about collecting Nazi memorabilia before you will find one about fountain pens.
I love the way fountain pens write.
They're amazing.
Do you remember the disposable ones they had for a while?
Oh, yeah, they still make them.
Do they really? Because those are my favorites in college.
They're called Pilot Victory?
Yeah.
Or what? Something like that. They still make them.
Oh, wow. I got to find some. When I was in college, I wrote exclusively with fountain pens.
Fountain pens don't have to be... Excuse me. Expensive.
Yeah.
Lamy makes a very nice line of plastic ones that you can get cartridges for.
Oh, cool.
Huh.
So my handwriting is awful with a ballpoint. I just can't even.
Oh no, I look like a.
They just their ink everywhere. It's a mess. I look like an 8-year-old who got into the paint.
Are you a lefty?
No. Oh, okay. just
ham-fisted.
Just terrible.
Just terrible.
I think it's something I'm correcting as an adult, but my stroke order for drawing Roman alphabet is wrong. It's something I'm just fixing now because I'm dyslexic.
Oh, okay.
I never learned how to write the characters.
I would actually suggest the opposite of what your wife just said. I would say get a broad nib and write bigger.
Oh.
Because you're a big guy. You have a large hand. You don't want to sit there because I have a Parker 51 Demi, which is a woman's pen, and has a super fine nib, and I love it, but it makes these little marks. But then virtually, and I found that and got it restored, virtually everything else I buy is a wide nib, and you just make these big swoopy marks. And
maybe I'll give it another shot.
I like fine point,
I write really small. Anyway,
question number four is, what is your favorite sandwich?
My favorite sandwich in the whole wide world is a Wendy's double with only lettuce, onions, and mayonnaise. I have yet to find a better chain fast food hamburger than a Wendy's double.
No cheese?
No, you have cheese. Okay. Yeah, well, you have cheese. But I've been to Five Guys. I've been to Jack in the Box. Jack in the Box sucks. Take that, California.
Pal.
Suck it. Your water's going away. I hope you die.
I haven't been in In-N-Out Burger yet. I was in one down in Texas called like Wonder Burger or something. Terrible. It's awful.
Is it Whataburger?
Whataburger. That's it.
Whataburger.
Yeah.
I had their mustard in a Reddit gifts exchange once.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I don't like Wendy's at all. But that's all right. Different. That's why some people have Wendy's and some people have Five Guys. So.
If we didn't have pork chop, if every pork chop was perfect, we wouldn't have hot dogs.
Swords of Wisdom from the Alice cartoon. Question number five. What is the stupidest thing anyone has ever said about your non-belief?
When I was in college, I wrote a column for the newspaper where basically it was my job to be a smartass and just, you know, and it was a very apathetic, it was the early 90s. Everybody else was just there to get a good job and make a lot of money. It was primarily a pharmacy school.
It was the early 90s.
They were super apathetic. They did not care anything about politics until they tried to form a gay alliance on campus. Then everybody got super motivated to sign petitions. But I was talking about the fundamental questions of why I don't, you know. I think I'd said that comedy is my religion. Which I still believe because I think there's great power in the truth of comedy.
He has faith in comedy.
I do have faith in comedy.
Oh, we figured it out.
Well, as my friend Kirk, he talked about, like, you know, you have to find like one thing in your life that will never let you down. And I think for him, it was Queen, the music of Queen.
Oh.
And I said, comedy has always been there for me, and comedy has never let me down. So I described this and I said, you know, da 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 da. And then I got like, I think it was the letter was like, maybe if you read the Bible instead of watching comedians, you'd change your mind. And it's like, I have read
the Bible. Like you hadn't read the Bible. I love that they all think that we haven't read the Bible.
Yeah, maybe if you read the Bible.
You would like comedy more.
I don't know if you read the Bible.
That's frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, it's
such a standard thing, though, to tell you. Like,
to assume that, yeah, it's...
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I love like knowing things about religions to like talk to people about it and like try and figure. It's like, so in the Gospels, the apostles are presented as people who don't understand Jesus' messages, cannot understand his parables, and are incapable of following the simplest command, like stay awake.
Yeah.
Then the Acts come and they're completely perfect.
Yeah.
They figured it out.
Now they figured it
Jesus
out.
Jesus had 40 days to knock those suckers into
place. It was the 40 day management plan.
Yeah,
it's like
super intensive boot camp.
Yeah, like I'm Biggest Loser. Like they go from being super fat to really thin, like really fast.
It's like Jesus, the most pious apostle.
Like Jesus, like
they're
Jane Michaels,
one at a time.
And he's screaming in their faces.
And you think Judas is going to win, but then there's a big twist.
Really good. But, it's all in the editing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Bill, thank you for joining us. Do you have anything you would like to plug?
I do an infrequently updated podcast called the Blaxploitation Podcast with Brandy Brown. You can go to Blaxploitation Podcast and view that. I'm also on the Bird Chick podcast with my lovely wife, where she talks about the bird news and I make fun of it.
You're her Andy Richter,
essentially.
Yeah.
That's great.
Aww,
so
their vows.
we've been Geeks Without God. We're gonna go and read the Bible. So maybe we won't be back next week.
We're gonna watch Glee.
It's gonna fix me.
And we're gonna watch Glee. If you enjoyed the podcast, as always, please review us on iTunes. Just drop off a review. Tell people that you like the podcast. You can also like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and all that garbage. So we will catch you next week. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Maybe this podcast doesn't exist. Or maybe it does. I mean, who the hell knows?
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
Geeks without God.
Is this where we say the funny part?